Welcome to the last playoff edition of the True Blue LA podcast. Eric, how you feeling?
Wait, the last? Like we're done?
For the playoffs?
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, playoffs, okay. We're done. No, new worry. You and I will be born anew next week.
Full of optimism. Not only does baseball season end, it's a little bit of a gut punch that the season's over, but then also today's International Cat Day. It's like the world is slapping me in the face today. So, yeah.
They're pawing at you, so to speak.
That's right, yeah.
So the Dodgers in the World Series were terrible.
Yep, bad. Nope.
Yep, that. Walker Buehler, great. and that's about it.
Yeah, so last we recorded was after the first two games in Boston when the Dodgers were down 2-0. We'll recap the home games, which was, you know, three games at Dodger Stadium, but it was really like four because.
Yeah, I was about to say it was like two and a half games of excitement and elation, and then a game and a half of just horror. Just nonstop gross.
So, you know, and we've talked about this before, my sort of long-standing goal is to cover a 20-inning game.
Right, and I just want to attend one. But right, we share that.
And so the longest game I've ever done is, I'm trying to think, it was game three, 18 innings. Like, the longest postseason game ever by time, by innings. And I think I saw Jeff Sullivan tweet this. They were just barely short of the longest in one sitting time game,
yeah,
like in baseball history. 25
minutes.
Yeah, and like of any game, which is insane. I mean, just keep in mind too, like games, in the first half of the 20th century, they were called for darkness a lot, which is like it seems like such a caveman thing, you know, like we can't play. The gods have not provided us light. Game three was like just insane. Like, so you mentioned Walker Buehler, right? Like that was Walker Buehler's game. Like, they scored early. And I think we may have talked about this, before, like we were saying how you knew one of the left-handers was going to do something because, and then people were going to be like, see, I told you they should have started, you know, these dumb platoons. And even ignoring the fact that, like, a right-hander was starting in Game 3, and that's why they were back in. But anyway, so Jock Peterson homered and gave the Dodgers the 1-0 lead, which Walker Buehler made hold up. He pitched seven innings, and they turned it right over to Kenley Jansen, who hadn't pitched in about a week. And then Kenley gave up a home run in the eighth. And, you know, this was like, you know, a lot of people called it like similar to game two last year against Houston in the World Series, where Jansen tried to pitch two innings in relief. He gave up an inherited run on like sort of that play that Puig almost caught in right field. In the eighth inning, and then in the ninth, holding a one-run lead in his second inning, where he gave the tying home run, and then the Dodgers went on to lose in extras. So this time, he gave up the home run in the first inning. So if this wasn't an issue of, like, they're pushing Jansen too hard, second inning of work, he's fatigued, he just gave up the tying home run as if it was, you know, in it, like, if it was a one-inning thing, that there's his home run. So anyway, it's bad. It's a trend. We've seen this with Jansen. For all year, he gave up more than double the home runs he's ever given up in a season. So, it's been up and down. So it's bad. That game just kept going. The Red Sox took the lead in the 11th, and then the Dodgers tied it on like one of the more bizarre plays ever. Ian Kinsler at second sort of got eaten up a little bit by a hop, and then was off balance. And if he I think he had time to reset and just throw a regular throw to second or to first, but he sort of like chucked it right away and it was so bad and then allowed the timer to score. And then it kept Max Muncy in the 16th inning, almost hit a walk-off home run that maybe missed by a few feet down the right field line, just foul. And then in the 18th inning, he hit an actual walk-off home run. So yeah, 7 hours and 20 minutes, crazy game. But again, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but you know, Dodger offense sort of struggling. They won the game, but it took them 18 innings to score 3 runs. So it was a thrilling game. But it was just, it took forever. Like it ended at 12:30, local time, and 3:30 3:30 for people back east. So like my brother was in Baltimore. He's texting me still at the end of the game. I was impressed that they were all up. Had a nephew from Texas was texting me. Same thing. He's on your time. Just craziness. And like everyone was pretty much a zombie for the next like day or so.
Yeah, no. So like I said, it ended 2:30 Kansas City time. My wife went to bed around, I think the 10th inning, maybe. A friend who was staying over the night went to bed, was not a baseball fan, but enjoyed watching me squirm. Went to bed, I think, in the 15th inning. And when Muncy hit the home run, I had as visceral and gut of a reaction as I've ever had. And I just screamed at the top of my lungs. And I did not, there was no consciousness to it. It just occurred. Neither my wife nor my friend remember waking up, but I'm fairly sure I woke both of them up because I could hear the wood creak above me.
Wow.
But it was, to quickly recap, I tend to not watch playoff games unless the Dodgers get a big lead, except I watch the ninth inning. And no matter what, I will watch the ninth inning. And apparently, I will also watch extra innings. So I gotta watch a full game of baseball and then some. So, yeah, in a lot of ways, I'm glad the Dodgers gave us a happy memory. And then in Game 4, we had another one, the Puig home run. I was watching my godson for his birthday, but checked the score right when the Puig home run happened and was like 4-0. This is great. The Dodgers have a more rested bullpen, I thought. They're going to tie the series up. It's going to become a best of three. This is wonderful. And so I started paying attention because the Dodgers were winning by a lot of runs. And then immediately when I started really paying attention, the next home run was given up and nothing came back from that.
Yeah. And so we were talking about like signature moments. You know, Buehler was obviously great in Game 3, and then Muncy had the walk-off. So that was like the one sort of lone highlight. But I thought for me at this point, like the Dodgers, like, I sort of am remiss about this. Like, hey, both teams used like everybody. They set all sorts of records in that game. They used 23 players each. Each team used 9 pitchers. But like the Red Sox were going to have Nathan Eovaldi, Game 4 starter. He pitched 6 innings of relief and gave up the home run in his 7th inning. He was great. Like, and he took the hard luck loss, but man, like it was almost like this legend of Nathan Eovaldi was building in that. And it was no doubt like a great performance, especially given that he also pitched in relief in games 1 and 2. But yeah, what an amazing sort of performance that was. But then game 4, if they were down 3-0, you know, everyone knows it's a death knell. Like even in World Series history, in like a best of 7, when anyone's up 3-0, I think it happened 24 times, and the team that was ahead swept in 21 of those times. So like, and then the 3 times that the teams that were down won game 4, they immediately lost in game 5 anyway. Mm-hmm. So like, you're done at 3-0. I know the Red Sox came back in the ALCS, whatever, but yeah, like you know, you're done at 3-0, and the Red Sox, you know, their credit, they were going for it. Like they're like, we'll figure it out tomorrow. We're trying to go up 3-0, and it just didn't work. And so by all accounts, with no Eovaldi and the Red Sox sort of having to scramble for game 4, it all of a sudden looked like, man, the Dodgers are going to tie this series. Like, they're right back into it. So you go into game 4, and like Rich Hill pitching well, And they finally scratch across a run again on an error in the sixth. So they're up 1-0. And again, the offense struggling. We'll get to that later. But with two runners on in the sixth, the signature moment for me for this World Series like had to be Yasiel Puig's home run. It was a 3-run shot. It put him up 4-0. And like he immediately like raised his arms. It was like this joyous moment. And like you're thinking, and like right away, like Eduardo Rodriguez on the mound was like throwing his glove to the ground. And like it was like, I even tweeted, I was like, there's your cover shot. You know, like that's the World Series for the Dodgers. Like, kind of what happens. And then like almost nothing went right from that point forward. Like,
There's a Kike Hernandez home run tucked away in the depths of the misery.
Right.
And that's it. That was the only good thing that happened.
they're up 4-0 in it gets into the seventh, which, it was the longest outing, postseason outing for Rich Hill. We've talked about this. They've always had a short leash on him. He has like a 2.66 postseason ERA for the Dodgers, but they've also managed him very well. There was like a lot of like confusion about this, I'll say, and I think part of this goes in, and a lot of this, or at least on Twitter, the sort of way quotes are parsed, it makes the interpretation bad. But so this is the day after an 18-inning game. The bullpen, for the most part, is like kind of shot. You know, there's not. Of all the games to sort of push Rich Hill, this was the one. And he was pitching into the seventh, so like this, they were, from their standards, pushing Rich Hill. He put a batter on, but then he struck out a guy. And then so at this point, Brock Holt's up. A left-hander, mind you. So you'd figure left on left, Rich Hill could probably face him. So the confusion sets in is this. Before the seventh inning, Roberts and Rich Hill had a conversation, and Rich Hill said, like, keep an eye on me. If you see me, like, you know, think I'm getting tired or whatever, take, you know, whatever. But he wasn't like saying, hey, I'm tired, take me on. I think that's how it sort of got interpreted, because this came to light. I think Dave Roberts in the post game in game four was talking about it, and he sort of explained this meeting. And I think it got tweeted like, Rich Hill told Dave Roberts he was tired, which wasn't the case. That's what happened. Then, so with one out, one on, Brock Holt's up, Roberts comes to the mound. This was sort of clarified on Sunday after the fact, that at this point, he hadn't made a decision yet to make a pitching change, and which was rare, because Rich Hill was saying like every time he comes to the mound, I'm out, you know, like that's generally a thing. So there was this weird situation where like as Roberts approached the mound, Rich Hill started walking down the slope of the mound toward Roberts, thinking like he's clearly pulling me. And Roberts kind of like in a weird way, like saw that, as like, oh, he wants to come out. And during some course in the next few moments, like Roberts decided to take Hill out at that point. On its face, you know, again, they always take Rich Hill out early. You know, it's a thing. I don't know. But he was already like sort of pushing it. But then again, he was awesome. Like, too, he gave up a hit. But we've seen Rich Hill. He can kind of lose it in a hurry. Walk a guy, then home run. It happens. Whatever. I mean, I would have let him face Holt, and I think that's where the unraveling sort of began. But they brought in Alexander, which was a lefty, who walked Brock Holt, and then I was joking at the time because I thought they were going to bring in Ryan Madsen, and I was like, well, you know, because he has to like have an inherited runner at least to come in.
No, so how about two?
Yeah, they waited until after Alexander walked away. So Ryan Madsen, who had let all five inherited runners score in Boston in the first two games, comes in with two runners on, and then like gives up a 3-run homer, like a Matt Stairsian 3-run homer to Steve Pierce. Yeah, and so this makes it 4-3. The Dodgers are still leading, but man, so Ryan Madsen, a clean 7-for-7, seven inherited runs, but that home run was his run. So he actually gave up a run in the World Series. So he didn't get to have the spotless 0-0 ERA with 7 inherited runs. But anyway, that's bad. But what followed was like, we're in this weird time now where suddenly everyone's clamoring for like, why didn't they go to Pedro Baez? That's the, I don't know what universe this is, like, where all of a sudden he's the clear-cut savior. I get he's been really good, but, like, at the same time, people wanted to run him out of town, you know, months ago, if not last year and even more. But anyway, and also what we didn't know until after the fact was, we assumed, but Pedro Baez, Julio Urias were unavailable in game 4. Understandable. Long game the night before. Someone's going to be down. Baez pitched 2 innings. Urias 1, but he's also, you know, rarely pitches back-to-back, regularly a starter. You get why they're being sort of cautious with him. As a quick aside, people are saying, like, how could you be unavailable for the World Series? You know, it's like...
Yeah. And then they compare just how frequently Alex Cora has been using the same pitchers, starters, over and over and over again. And...
Yeah, right. Like, people were saying, well, Eovaldi told Price he was available in game 4. I'm like, yeah, he said that, but he wasn't really available. You know, like, he just said that because that's fun to say. And he's Bill Brasky, basically. Like, but then also, you look, you know why he was unavailable? Because this isn't willy-nilly. Like, they have, like, the medical team, like, sort of monitoring these guys during warm-ups the next day. How are they feeling? That kind of thing. And that's really the determination of it. So, but you saw last year in the World Series, the middle 3 games, man, Brandon Morrow ended up pitching in every game of the World Series. Had he pitched in 6 of the games, like, they might have won. Because when he pitched in the 3rd day in a row in game 5, he pleaded, like, they didn't want to use him. And he pleaded to go in, and he gave up, like, 4 or 3 rockets, 2 home runs in 4 batters face, didn't record an out. And they lost that game in extra innings. So you don't bring Brandon Morrow in, maybe that Dodgers win it in regulation. Who knows? But
and I just want to clarify. You said you would have kept Hill in for Holt, would I. We don't want to come across as if we think Dave Roberts is blameless here. He made a number of mistakes, especially certainly in that game and throughout the postseason. But the issue is every manager is going to make those mistakes. And it's easy to call them mistakes because you think of doing the decision differently and you are always going to assume the sunny outside. And that's not necessarily going to happen. The issue is that Dave Roberts may have cost the Dodgers some amount of win equity throughout this series, but it is dwarfed by how awful the offense was, how bad the bullpen was, and how mediocre Clayton Kershaw was. And I'll give Ryu a pass in the World Series, and then obviously Walker Buehler was great. But he is so low on what the manager did in this World Series, and it's dwarfed by how much good I think Dave Roberts did throughout this season. So, but just to be clear, we don't want to say Dave Roberts is perfect and he did great and we love him and all of that.
Right, exactly. And then to sort of more to your point, like I also think the other main or mistake I thought was Roberts in game 1. The big mistake was when he brought in Madsen in relief of Kershaw.
I was about to Madsen... say, in general, it's his trust in Madsen, I thought.
Right. Oh, yeah. The fact that all of a sudden Madsen's the half-tube fire stopper, but the fact that Madsen, like, didn't have enough time to warm up, like, that he wasn't, like, ready. And so, like, he and Madsen said as much, like, the next day. And so credit to Grant Brisby, because we were in Slack, during the game, we're sort of going over stuff. And he, at the time, he's like, Madsen, like, barely warmed up, like, you know, and at the time he didn't think much of it. But then that Madsen said as much the next day. So it's like, yeah, he didn't. So he was sort of rushed into that game. The next day when he was brought in, you could see they kept stalling with Ryu on the mound to give Madsen more time to warm up. So they were, like, aware of it. But
how'd that do?
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, sometimes, like, no matter what. But, and then back to game 4, they brought in Kenley again. in the eighth. This is one day after he threw two innings. They let him throw the ninth in game three after giving up the home run in the eighth. He was actually fine in game three after the home run. But then, so they brought him in the eighth again in game four, and everyone's like, what? Another two-inning save attempt? Like, but honestly, like, we don't know for sure on this, but it seems like Jansen was only brought in the eighth because
it was the heart of the lineup.
Yeah, heart of the lineup. Yeah. So
that's what I assumed.
Right, and that's like actually progressive and like a thing to be sort of celebrated. Like, for all his faults, Kenley is still the Dodgers' best reliever. Like, sure, Pedro Baez is great. Or has been great, but like, right, just like isolate that clip, right? Right. So, like, let's assume he's like all of a sudden, you know, awesome. So, but still, Kenley Jansen's still better, like, you know, even a diminished Kenley Jansen. But anyway, so people were clamoring at this point for Baez because they didn't realize he was unavailable. But given that he was unavailable, it's understandable why they did this. They go to Jansen and he gives up another game tying home run. So here, the problem with this is, like, yeah, if you're, like, you know, generational-type closer, probably the best relief pitcher in franchise history, don't at me, Ron Peronoski lovers, but if Jansen's going to keep blowing saves, like, that's a problem. Like, that's not, like, on the manager, necessarily. Like, so it's bad. When your star players are not performing, you're going to look bad. But anyway, and then it unraveled after that because literally every reliever Roberts brought in gave up a run, and they didn't have Baez, they didn't have Urias. So it was six different relievers gave up runs in that game. It was it tied a major league record.
oh boy!
So, yeah, and for any game, not just postseason. So everything was bad, and then flashing ahead a little bit, Baez was pitched. He did pitch in relief in game five when he was available. And he gave up a home run. So, like, it's like everywhere Roberts turned, at some point, it's like when every choice you make fails, or like when every player doesn't perform, you know, maybe it's not the choice itself, but the players, like, I think Kershaw's quote yesterday after game five was maybe it wasn't a personnel thing, maybe it was a just play better thing. Like, and that's pretty much right. But yeah, so game, four was a disaster. They were up 4-0 in the seventh inning. They lose 9-6. So the Red Sox poured on five in the ninth after Jansen was out. And it was just a shit show. And like Kiki Hernandez hit a two-run homer in the ninth to pull him closer. They put another runner on, but didn't really threaten. Kiki had a really bad postseason overall. We'll get to that in a second. But so yeah, that's the death blow. They're down 3-1 in the series. That's never good.
And I think that's the moment where I, and I assume many other Dodger fans, kind of made their peace with this season.
Right.
In my case, that was a sad place. A lot of people, it was an angry place.
Yeah, John Wiseman has always written well about this, talking about best. Like the loser's
He's
dividend.
So good about writing about losing.
Yeah, and so like that was kind of Sunday. You're like, well, they're going to lose the series, so let's just enjoy what we can out of this game or whatever. No, God. So for history, and now we can include the Dodgers in this, 48 times. What is this here? Dun, 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 dun. Oh, yeah. So 48 times a team has gone up 3-1 in the best of seven World Series. 41 times the team has won, so... It's bad. Anyway, game five, we get Kershaw and David Price in a battle of it's like a postseason narrative off. Only Price has like managed to like completely turn that narrative on its ear over the last like 2 weeks, and the fact that he did that leads you to believe that like. These postseason narratives don't really matter. Like the fact that they can like change on a whim, like literally, it just is what it is. Like both have been bad in the postseason relative to their regular season work. Kershaw even after losing game five, and Price after like three really good starts in a row, plus a relief appearance mixed in there. his postseason ERA is still worse than Kershaw, which tells you something about how like struggling he had it. But anyway, game five, Kershaw was, he gave up a 2-run home run in the first inning. He ended up giving up 3 home runs total, 4 runs in 7 innings. You know, not the worst start, but you know, you're with no offense. They only scored 1 run in game five, so it didn't really matter. But Kershaw gave up 9 runs in 11 innings in the World Series. So that's bad. You know, like there's really no other way to put it. So, you know, you understand why, like, this isn't like a made-up narrative. It's just the fact is, like, Kershaw is not as good in the postseason as he is in the regular season, and that's the conundrum. Because his regular season numbers suggest he's, like, one of the very best pitchers of all time. He's, like, the best pitcher of this generation. But in the postseason, the numbers are not good comparatively. Excuse me. His regular season ERA is 2.39. Now he's at 4.32 in the postseason in 152 innings. So this isn't a small sample. He's had some really good games, including this postseason. He's also had some stinkers. And yeah.
We talked about this on an episode, I think, maybe right before the playoffs began. A lot of the, like, even if you take out, because he was, you could argue, mismanaged for the first however many playoffs. And even if you take that out, he's a fine pitcher in the playoffs. And some of that is that he's going against really good offenses. A lot of really good pitchers will put up mediocre numbers. Chris Sale has done it kind of throughout his career, similar-ish to how Kershaw has performed. But that's still no excuse. It's still worse than you would expect, even given that you're going against good offenses, even if you take out kind of the some of the games where he was mismanaged, and even if you take out some of the bad luck of if Kershaw leaves the game with runners on base, they are going to score. It's just how this works.
Exactly. And so, in fact, I wrote about this a couple weeks back, and I ended up updating it last night, but Kershaw in his last 7 postseason starts where he's left with runners on, the bullpen has allowed those runners to score. So actually all but 1 runner in that span. But in his postseason career, 16 runners left on base when Kershaw leaves a start. This is covering 9 different starts. And 13 of those runners have scored, 80%. You know, the normal, like, scoring rate is, like, 30%. But, you know, I went and looked at, like, the base out situations, and you can get, like, a run expectancy for those. In the last 7 times that Kershaw has done this, like, more runs have scored than would have been expected during, like, given, like, average situations in those. So, in fact, to the point where, instead, you know, he gave up those 13 inherited runs that were charged to Kershaw's ERA, you would have... In normal circumstances, you would have expected about 5.5 runs. So he got like an extra 7.5. But like, even if you remove, like you just say, look, we're not going to penalize Kershaw for this, and you remove it, even that, like his starter's ERA in the postseason, 4.43, it lowers to just 3.96. Yeah, so you're
exactly,
you're really, yeah. And so the average, like the average starting pitcher ERA during Kershaw's career is 3.90. So like, the fact that, like, even if you're giving Kershaw credit, he's an average starter in the postseason, and that's not good. It's not good enough when you're Clayton Kershaw.
That's how to put it. It's not good enough.
Yeah. So it doesn't mean he's a choker.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you absolutely shouldn't bring him back if he opts out.
Right. And so, I don't know. It just,
and we'll
just
talk about
that
a little bit, I'm sure.
Yeah. And, but just before we sort of get into like that stuff, I know we ended up sort of jumping all over, and that's my fault. But like, just I want to just touch on just some other things. The offense was just terrible,
awful.
Like, yeah, like
as an example that I'm not always defend Dave Roberts' position. I was saying before the World Series began that Kike should not start a game. Period. I don't care about the platoons. I don't care about history. He has not looked good, and he is a liability if he's in a starter, even with the defensive prowess that he provides, and he's hitting third. And I understand that where you hit in the lineup doesn't matter that much, yada, 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 but it still did not make sense to me.
the fact that he was hitting third in game five was just like, okay, like this, some, you know, whatever. Yeah. But like, I you could argue, like, because I know that everyone complained about platoons regardless of like facts that they work, but like, it just didn't, like almost literally everybody sucked in the postseason, and, and especially in the World Series. Like, so here, I was gonna quiz you on this. Okay, no, so Yasiel Puig hit 250. He was 5 for 20. He had the big home run in game four. 250 in the World Series. Where do you think that ranked among Dodgers among in batting average?
Our zero sample size. I'm trying to think of, was there a pitcher that got a random hit? No, probably not.
Any sample size. Anyone who batted.
I mean, I went into this saying I was going to defend Walker Buehler, and then the next player I was going to defend was Puig. So was it first?
Oh, man. It would have been great if it was first. I wish it was first. it was third.
Okay. Who is above it?
So David Fries, he was 5 for 12, and home run and a triple, and a walk. So he hit .417. Justin Turner was 8 for 24. Seemed like he had a quiet series, but I'll tell you why it seemed like that. So he hit .333. It's because he didn't bat with a runner in scoring position until the third inning of game five. Like that's stupid. Like he batted before that six times with runners on base. Every single time it was a single runner on first, and that's it. He was 3 for 6 within those times, like before game five, and including a double, but like the double didn't score the run. So not giving your best hitter like opportunities is a recipe for disaster. And then the one time Turner finally bats with a runner in scoring position, David Fried's got a gift triple last night in the third. Dodgers were down 2-1. This is kind of a key moment in the game. JD Martinez is terrible and right. Like couldn't see the ball and it bounced behind him, and it was a triple for Freeze with one out. And then so Turner's up, prime scoring opportunity, first pitch ground out to short, like just one of the more deflating things ever. Like, and then Kike, who was batting third, then flew out. Weird that he didn't drive in the run. Just to pile on here, just Kike for the entire playoffs, and he is not alone in this by far. 5 for 41 with 2 home runs and 5 walks. His OPS, we hit .122. His OPS was .486. There are actually two Dodgers lower, and one eerily close to him. So we'll get to that in a second. But okay, so you talking about like Turner, right? He was. You know, he was getting on base, just not getting opportunities to drive in runs. So Machado, though, Manny Machado, was getting the opportunities and did not do anything. Machado drove in 3 runs in the first game, didn't drive in a single run after that. He came to bat 24 times during the series. 14 times there was a runner on base, mostly like Turner was hitting ahead of him.
Yeah.
Sometimes Muncy, and so like, but. He just didn't do anything. Machado for the World Series. Let me see what he did because I thought I had it in front of me. No, 4 for 22, 182 with no extra base hits and a walk. So invisible pretty much. And just kind of drew the ire of like home and away fans alike. He kicked Jesus Aguilar. He actually stepped on Steve Pierce in this series at first, but that looked more legitimate than nefarious. He didn't hustle at times. He talked last series about how that's not his style. just going out of his way to like be unlikable pretty much, I think, but also not producing. So in the postseason, he ended up, he hit 3 home runs. He led the Dodgers with 12 RBIs. In fact, man, nobody had more than 8 other than him. And so in the entire – they played one more game than they did last year. They played 16 games. He played in all of them. He hit .227, .278, .394. So – and he was one of the better hitters so in the postseason. So it was bad. So that was like the runners on base thing. I'm going over – I wrote about it this morning. It was just really bad. Like they were – The Dodgers were held scoreless in 35 of the last 41 innings of the World Series, so it was bad. Just bad all over and not good. But I wanted to go in. Okay, so for me, another thing, like we talked about this a little bit last time, but, you know, the catching was just so terrible. Like
it was so funny. Like Dave would eventually pitch hit for one of them, and I'd just be like, whatever. It doesn't, like, you know, with his trust in Grandal and the NLCS was a little infuriating, and it went away. And then Barnes was kind of, maybe the stats and results were the same, but at least Barnes' approach looked better. And by the end of it, I was like, I just don't care. Both these guys are bad.
You're right. And it's like Grandal was struggling. I think he was replaced a lot more for his like defensive stuff. And plus he was struggling at the plate too. Sure. But they managed to find someone who was worse offensively, like, and then him, like, and Austin Barnes. So just the raw numbers in the postseason total, Grandal was 4 for 29. He hit a home run and a double. He actually walked 5 times. Barnes was 2 for 29 with no extra base hits and 3 walks. So combined, that's not good. 6 for 58. Barely over 100. Barnes is OPS 225 for the playoffs. Grandal was actually 541, which ahead of the Kike line, as we put it. But it was just, it's really bad, man. Like let's see, I'm looking at this. Okay, Ryan Madsen actually had the lowest OPS of anyone because he batted once and struck out, so he was 0. But among non-pitchers, Barnes had the lowest OPS at 225. There is someone in between Barnes and Kike in OPS. Who do you think it was?
Jeez. Who could it be? Going there. Was it Bellinger?
It was.
Yeah.
6 for 52.
I'm so bad when you ask me questions on the spot like that. But when it comes to just how bad a team is, I got it. I've got this on lockdown.
Everything was below 200. 115 average, 193 on base, 192 slugging. Brian Dozier was 2 for 16.
Your National League champions.
He walked 5. Yeah, how did they get the World Series? He walked 5 times. He OPS 489. Grandal was 541. Matt Kemp, 4 for 23 with a walk, 548 OPS. Jock Peterson, we're getting into the, you know, not good, but acceptable. He was 8 for 39. He OPS 647. He hit 205. Machado, I mentioned. Muncy was okay. This is where, so the productive hitters are basically this. Muncy, and he only hit 200, but he had a 355 on base and 400 slugging. So he was like passable. He walked 12 times, led the team, but he was 10 for 50. And he struck out 23 times. So it was a problem. Turner overall, he hit 299 with a 373 on base, but he had the home run in Milwaukee, but other than that, only 3 doubles. He slugged 388, so a little bit of an issue there. Chris Taylor was actually really good. Mm-hmm. He OPS 853. Puig was 855. Like, those two were like really good. And then we mentioned David Fries. He ended up for the whole playoffs OPSing 1196 because he was hot, and mostly got hit against lefties, and he really, you know, did well in those situations. So, but yeah, as a team, it was bad. They scored 16 runs in the 5 games, and one of those games went 18 innings. So it was basically 6 games for the Dodgers, and it was really bad. In the World Series, the Dodgers hit 180. 249, 302. Yikes.
Yeah, I looked that up after game 4. Just how bad has this team just been on the whole? And
Oh, it's runners in scoring position. It was that, but it was everything. Like, they were 4 for 20 with runners in scoring position in World Series, which was better than their normal line. but the fact they also had, like, it was like a couple walks, and they had up 25 plate appearances. That's only 5 a game. Like, that's, you can't live on that. You know, you have to get opportunities. So they didn't have the opportunities. They didn't do anything with the opportunities. So it was like, man, it was just bad. I don't know. There's a couple other things. So this is 2 years in a row that the World Series has been decided at Dodger Stadium, but the Dodgers weren't the ones winning. So overall, it's the first time a stadium's had the World Series winner in back-to-back years since 1976 and 77, Yankee Stadium. Yankees won the second one. The Reds won the first one in that one. So the last team to actually lose back-to-back World Series at home were the 36-37 Giants. So, man,
Vince Scully's team.
Right, exactly. So,
fitting.
Yeah,
was... John Wiseman and Vince Scully, two people who can talk about, can put the poetry to the my feelings when the Dodgers eventually disappoint me.
Right. So they had the, I get it, because Vin's sort of out of the public eye and sort of, you know, he's retired. Let him retire. And yeah. Not that I'm, but I was surprised that he wasn't sort of involved. I thought they might have brought him out at least for like a, from the suite, time, it's time for Dodger baseball or something like that, but never happened during the World Series. They, I'm trying to remember, who was the first, Lasorda threw out the first pitch in Game 3. He came in on the bullpen cart, which was cool, because they actually got to use it, which was neat. They had Dennis Eckersley throw to Kurt Gibson in Game 4, which Eckersley is, like, the coolest sport, man. Like, that guy, he's like, so confident, and he's a Hall of Famer, he knows he's good. He's a really good announcer, he's, like, accepted, like, his role in that, like, better than like anyone could have hoped, you know, like could have expected.
And he said that right after the home, that day.
Yeah.
Like, this is what they're going to know me as and whatever.
Yeah. But it wasn't true because he's a Hall of Famer, you know, and stuff. But like, yeah, he's like, I just love it. They're like, they had a good friendship. So that's the, but then Game 5 was Oral Hershiser, which was great. The World Series is over, and part of the being in the World Series, or, you know, being sort of involved in the playoffs for so long, it's the offseason always comes at you so fast, and like already, like this happened last night on Sunday, and already Monday morning, it's time for free agency. Like, welcome to the offseason. Like,
it's easier for me to say this when the Dodgers haven't lost in the World Series, but it is one of the things I love about baseball. And then NBA as well, is that it's just nonstop. You can just, there's very, not a lot of dead period. January kind of gets a little long in the tooth, but other than that, there's always something going on. There's always something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. And for the Dodgers, so the
right
main
away.
Thing, right, is we'll know by Wednesday, three days after the World Series, what Kershaw's status is. So we've talked about this before. He has 2 years, $65 million left on his contract. He has 3 days to decide whether he's going to opt out. He could opt into free agency, which is basically meaning they have 3 days to try to like work out some sort of like different deal, or, you know, either tacking on years, tearing up that deal, or whatever. So, we'll see what's going to happen there. I mean, if I'm a betting person, I think we talked about this. Kershaw is pitching for the Dodgers in 2019 and beyond, but we'll see. I mean, you know, who knows what could happen? Maybe things go really bad in the next couple of days, and they can't figure something out. I don't think it's going to come to that, but we'll see. But it's going to happen really quick. The other sort of option involved is a little bit lesser, not in importance, but it is. But David Freese has a $6 million club option or a $500,000 buyout. Even in a like reduced role, where like let's say he's just going to start against lefties and mix in occasionally. Other than that,
for the last few years,
right,
has struggled to hit against left-handers, seems pretty easy to me.
I think they pick it up. There's a chance, like maybe his market isn't $6 million, maybe they try to work out another deal before then. But I think they ultimately pick that up. So that's going to be this week. So the Dodgers have seven free agents. It's, Machado, Brian Dozier, Yasmani Grandal, Hyunjin Ryu, and then Mattson, Axford, and I'm already blanking on relievers. This is bad.
Hudson?
Yes, Daniel Hudson. Yeah. So it's those seven. Qualifying offer stuff is Friday, the fifth day after the World Series. So you can't offer it to guys who were traded. So Machado, like, he'd be a prime example if he wasn't traded, but he can't be. I mean, you have to consider it for both Grandal and Ryu. I don't know how likely it is for either one. I think they do, or I think they could for, this is one of those, like, I'm always like way more aggressive with when it's not my money, you know, but like Grandal, it's $17.9 million. It's a 1 year deal. If you decline it, team, if you sign like over $50 million, like total deal, the penalties are much more steep. But if you're signing a smaller deal, the team still forfeits a draft pick, but it's lower down. So I don't necessarily think Grandal is going to go out there and command $50 million just because I think he hurt his stock given sure. like some of his defensive and offensive struggles in the postseason. But that said, he's been one of the most productive catchers the last like 4 years. So. And catching is thin in the majors. So, like, you know, there's going to be teams that, like, need a catcher. So I think his market's going to be strong. So I think for that reason, you offer him the qualifying offer because thinking he's going to decline because of the strong market. And then on the off chance he accepts, the Dodgers still need catching for next year mm-hmm. because Kyber Ruiz and Will Smith, they're not ready to like, take over in 2019. And are you going to – And honestly, like Austin Barnes had one of the more disappointing seasons you could think of because after such a strong 2017, he was bad at the plate like in 2019. And like there's questions whether he can even be a full-time catcher if they wanted him to do that. So like, man, it's rough. So I think their best case scenario is honestly Grandal accepting the qualifying offer.
Yeah, that's but like, so
I think I think you offer it to him thinking he's going to decline it and you just take whatever draft pick you get when he signs elsewhere. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. And then Ryu, injury risk, might want to come back to the Dodgers on a one-year deal anyway, or like some sort of deal. I don't know. I don't think they offer him the qualifying offer, but you could sort of see it in a similar fashion. But yeah, so we'll find this. We're going to know by the time we record next week of the status of a lot of this stuff. And then I guess the other big thing is Dave Roberts. So his contract status is he has an option, club option for 2019, which the club has not picked up yet. I think it's more of a formality. I think what's going to happen is they end up signing him to an extension at some point. I mean, he can't go into next year with just 1 year. Like almost nobody does that. It's bad. Lame duck status, never good for that. So I think they'll work out something in the next week or so, who knows, but we'll find out. I know, like you were talking about, the consensus Dodger online is...
I don't want to say Dodger Twitter, because that represents a family that you and I are a part of and are right. a much more understanding group. But how about your mentions? Your mentions will not be happy when the Dodgers announce an extension.
Oh, yeah. They're never going to win. They should have fired him. This was, like, gross mismanagement, you know, that kind of, like, and then, but at the same time, they'll be like, when they'll denigrate, like, why are they using analytics? Roberts isn't calling the shots. Well, it's like, well, then whose fault is it then? You know, like, I don't know. But anyway, I don't think that's the case. But, I would imagine by next week we'll have a pretty, pretty good idea of what's going on. It could be, like, sort of franchise altering depending on how things go, but we will find out. But that's where we're at. We're in hot stove mode now.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see. Like you said, it's really interesting that by the time we record next week, two of the biggest how the Dodgers offseason is dictated really is going to get shaped by catcher and whether or not Yasmani is offered and then accepts an offer, kind of clears that up, and then you know, someone to slot right around Walker Buehler to kind of head your rotation. And then little bit of Hyunjin Ryu as well. Just what does that rotation look like will dictate the needs. You and I are going to talk about a little bit. I think you and I are going to try and make the best roster we can, assuming the Dodgers do zero trades and zero free agent signings. Obviously they won't, but we'll see where the Dodgers stand and see if we can get an idea of where their biggest needs are there.
So as it stands right now, the seven free agents were free agents as of Monday morning. So the Dodgers have 39 players on the 40-man roster. That includes Chase Utley, who at some point is going to be put on the retirement list, I'm imagining. So it's really 38. But I imagine, you know, they have like 13 arbitration-eligible guys. There's going to be some culling of that roster. Like, I think some of those guys are going to be either non-tendered or trying to outright them to the minors or even traded. So I think this, like last season, was a very quiet offseason, relatively, outside of the Charlie Culberson trade. This season I think is going to be a lot more active no matter what happens in this first week. I think it's going to be a creative offseason and a very different one than last year. So we'll keep you posted every time. But thanks for listening, everybody. World Series is over and happy offseason. We'll be right back.